Just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. A Friday edition of Smith and Jones as we get you set for the weekend. And yet again, I can say the sun is shining, the snow is melting, and spring is around the corner. And it's also game day for the Toronto Raptors. Spring. We talk about spring and the Toronto Blue Jays as well in full swing down in Dunedin. So lots to talk about with the Toronto Blue Jays as well as we count down to the start of the Major League Baseball season. And news coming out of Sportsnet today with the announcement of spring training coverage as well. So find out all the details at sportsnet.ca for coverage on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Now of the Jays down at spring training getting set for first pitch of the season as well. Well, counting towards that opening day game against the New York Yankees. Lots to discuss today, Jonesy, in terms of the Toronto Raptors, though, trying to get back on the winning track and, keep hovering around that 500 mark and at some point maybe want to go on a bit of a run to get well above 500 and not even to think back to being back at 500 or being below 500. And the tough thing is it's going to become that much tougher in the second half of the season, because with that schedule being announced about a day and a half ago, this is the calm part right now. The last four or five games of the first half of the season approaching the All-Star break. In the second half of the season, you start going through the league. I'm seeing teams with, I honestly haven't even done the count for the Raptors because I don't want to fry my mind. As much as I love basketball, I'm seeing teams 42 games in 65 days. 37 games in 64 days, 7 games in 10 nights for some teams. It's crazy how the NBA, and I mean, it's part of the process, I guess, part of what they've had to do in jamming in this season, but they really have jammed it in with a shoehorn here, trying to, get in these 72 games. Keep in mind, the NBA playing 16 less than what the National Hockey League is, or 16 more, excuse me, than what the National Hockey League is.
16 more, yeah. It's really jammed. We were talking about it yesterday, and the season doesn't start back up till March 11th or so after the break, and in like there's 12 games in 20 days. I sat down and started to plug the schedule into my phone and kind of maneuver with other dates and things that were going on in April. There's 14 games in 29 days for the Raptors. I did the math, Eric, and I stopped after March and April because my brain was fried and looking at how much of a crunch it is and how compacted the schedule is. And then you are expected to be at your best come playoff time. So again, the words ring true. The best ability might be availability, and teams being fortunate to dodge injuries and dodge the virus and just try to stay healthy. And sometimes you may win just because you have more players or more of your top level, your better players are available than the other guy. And that's the way it goes. I mean, we saw Miami the other night. They're playing well now. They're 8-3 in their last 11. Why? Well, they got Jimmy Butler back. He missed a bunch of games. So it's going to be a wild finish. It's going to be a wild finish after the break.
Jonesy, you mentioned the Heat and how well they're playing of late. Take a look at the standings now in the Eastern Conference, which again we kind of will probably continue to say this until it's no longer an issue or a storyline. You can jump from 5th to 12th in a night or two. And how rammed it is right now. The Boston Celtics, and it's always fun to say this, if the playoffs were to start today, well, there are still, 40 games remaining or 38 games remaining for a lot of teams. If the playoffs were to start today, the Boston Celtics are not in the playoffs. They're the ninth seed right now. Now, again, I know expanded playoff format this year. They're in the play, and they're at least in – they have a chance to make the playoffs. But I'm talking about, traditionally speaking at least, when you look at the top eight seeds, they are in a play-in right now, as are the Heat. The Hornets have the eighth seed. The Bulls in the seventh seed. The Raptors, a game below 500, sit in the fifth seed, but they are only – a game and a half out of being down as the 11th seed. It's just crazy what's happening in the Eastern Conference. And I don't talk, for anybody that's thinking this right now, and Jonesy, I think I'm speaking on your behalf, I don't talk about the NHL in the same light or in the same vein, because with due respect, theirs is completely different this year with the realigning and the recreation of new divisions and whatnot and playing. And I understand it. I get it. And it's a smart decision. But playing against the, you know, only the same 7-8 teams, whatever, you can't compare. We can't sit here and talk about the North Division or all the other divisions in hockey and compare because there is no comparison. The NBA has kept it as normal as they could. East, West, period, playing against both conferences, flying all over the place. So it is wild to look at the East and to see what's unfolding nearly halfway into the year.
Yeah, and Eric, to that point, it's going to make the NHL playoffs really intriguing because it truly comes in like back in the day when there was East and West and you didn't really, or you know, in baseball, American League and National League, you really didn't see the other guy. You know, there might be stuff that they pull out that other teams in their division or league have seen and you don't. And they get you with the banana in the tailpipe the first time. And so I'm looking forward to that, in the NHL playoffs. How good are the Leafies? You know, they're atop the division. Yeah, but how good are they? But you're right with the NBA. It's it also opens it up. I mean, it also opens it up because anybody can beat anybody. Again, Brooklyn's the team that everybody's looking at in the East, and they've won 8 in a row. But what's it like come playoff time? And that's in a good and a bad way. Is their defense going to be that horrific that every game's going to be 140 to 137 in the playoffs? Because if they're banking on that, they're going to lose some. They're going to lose some. And you know, if you're New York or you're Toronto and you get Brooklyn and you have, you know, Tom Thibodeau's a defensive coach. Nick Nurse has great schemes. You plan for them the right way and, you know, frustrate them and steal a game here. And now they're chasing you. They're reacting to you. What's that going to be like? You know, what kind of pressure's on Milwaukee, Philadelphia? I just think East is so wide open. Anybody could come out of it. And then add in, as we said, the fact that it's not quite the bubble, but how pronounced is home court advantage really going to be if you have 3,000 people in the stands?
It's a great question. I don't know if any of us know the answer to that. I think it's just going to be one of those things we've got to just see unfold, right, and see what type of impact it ultimately has. Jonesy, we're going to continue talking NBA and the Toronto Raptors in a couple of moments when we're joined by Leo Routens, Raptors television analyst on Sportsnet. I do want to jump back to the hockey thing just for one second because, you know, listening last hour on Hockey Central as well, and just as you brought up, Jonesy, about the divisions and when the postseason ultimately rolls around and not knowing the other side, not knowing the competition that well because you haven't played against them. The one thing I've heard, at least from some folks in these circles, is, well, the North Division, you know, the Leafs, the Oilers, even the Jets, they've had a chance to maybe beat up on the Canucks or the Senators. They're terrible. You know, they're bad teams, whatever, even Calgary for that matter. But you take a look around the divisions. Calgary has you know, they've got themselves now up to just a game below 500. They've got 9-10-2 record. I still hate the ridiculous overtime thing. But either way, whatever. I digress on that. They're 9-10-2. But you look at every division in hockey right now. Each of the four divisions has at least two, if not three, teams below 500 or at the 500 mark. In the Central Division, Columbus is 8-8, 8-8-5. Nashville 8-11. Detroit 6-13-3. They're, you know, two teams below 500 for the rest of the division to beat up on. In the East Division, same thing. You got Jersey just a game up on 500 at 7-6-2. The Rangers 6-8-3. Buffalo 6-8-3. And that's actually saying something for Buffalo because they've been god awful this year. I'm actually shocked they're that close to 500. Same thing in the West. San Jose below 500. Anaheim below 500. So the West might be the one division that has a little bit more of a beef than others because Vegas, St. Louis, LA, Arizona, Minnesota, even Colorado, they're all playing well. They're all, you know, 3, 4, 5 games above 500. They're probably the best division in hockey going right now. But that said, then you swing it back to the North and go, okay, well, yeah, beyond Vancouver and Ottawa struggling, Toronto's now got Edmonton right on their heels. The Oilers have just one less victory, and Winnipeg coming on strong, having won 3 in a row, second only to Edmonton's 5 straight victories. And, oh, yeah, by the way, Leafs, Oilers, tomorrow night, Hockey Night in Canada, 7 o'clock puck drop. So it is pretty wild to think that a lot of these teams are having the chance to beat up on some others within their division. But, yeah, what will happen when they have to face the truest legit competition come postseason time, and they haven't had a chance to have any blueprint against those clubs for an entire season. That's going to be a very interesting wrinkle.
It is. Again, it just adds another layer, another variable into, you know, all of the stuff we talk about. And we know in every league, the playoffs are different. It's different when you have to beat somebody, you know, in the NHL, the NBA, you know, Major League Baseball, when you got to beat somebody 4 out of 7 times, you basically have to beat them down to win the series. Or in football, where they have 2 weeks. I mean, look at, you know, nobody could thought Patrick Mahomes could be stopped, and Todd Bowles had 2 weeks to prepare and he stopped them. So it just adds another layer, Eric, I think, another variable into the playoff mix once we get there.
More on the NHL situation, and I'm sure more on the Leafs and Oilers coming up later on today on Writer's Block at 2 o'clock, and of course later as well on Tim and Sid. And oh yeah, by the way, folks, make sure you're tuning in, not just for the rest of this show and not just for Writer's Block, but of course at 5 o'clock today for the final edition, the final show for Tim and Sid together, as Sid will be putting a bow on his run with Timmy on their final show today before he heads over to join the morning ranks on the TV side with Breakfast Television. And of course Tim will continue on in that time slot, but the final show later on today for Tim and Sid, I know I'll be tuning in to that as well. We bring into the conversation now, as we shift our attention to the Toronto Raptors getting set for the Houston Rockets, Raptors television analyst, former NBA, our colleague Leo Routens. Leo, thanks for the time today.
What's up, fellas? All good? Hope everything's good with you guys. Man, I'm gonna miss Tim and Sid. That's you know, it's not gonna be the same. No offense to Tim, but I love that show.
I hear you, man. It's definitely going to be different. I mean, we're talking about two guys that have worked together for you know, almost 20 years now, Leo, and that's something that I mean, the three of us have worked together in some way, shape, or form for the same amount of time, but it's different when you're doing it every single day. And you know what? I wasn't even going to start here, Leo, but seeing as we're kind of on that topic, how has that been for you over the course of your career? The fact that, you know, you as a broadcaster have to be a chameleon sometimes and be able to morph and adjust, whether it's, you know, whether it's John Saunders, Chuck Swirsky, Matt Devlin, whether it's myself or Jonesy, whether it's working in the studio with Rod, just having that ability to be flexible with a lot of different people that are kind of trying to pull in the same direction. But again, different folks that you've got to kind of learn tendencies with and whatnot over the course of your, you know, 25 plus years covering Raptor games.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it, right? It's not always easy, but that's the nature of the business. I'll be honest, like when John Saunders, you know, didn't come back with the Raptors, that was a tough one. That's you know, because John and I were always good friends. We became even closer during that time. We had this great synergy, and all of a sudden, boom, it was gone, right? So, but you know, you got to adapt, and I think one of the things that, as you guys know. You know, I used to do a lot of ESPN, a lot of other stuff. And the first thing I did was, whoever the play-by-play guy was, I just make it clear. It's your show. You don't like something, you say something. You know, you want more of this, less of that. You just tell me, no offense, take it, and let's have a good time. And that's the way I always entered every new relationship with anybody I work with. You know, let's just be open. Let's be comfortable. Let's have fun. And I think that's the only way you can do it if you really wanted to make it work. But that's just part of our business, right?
Absolutely. Speaking with Raptors television analyst Leo Routens. And Leo, we're going to give you a quick call back here and just see if we can get a connection on a clearer line. Having a little bit of a struggle with Leo's phone line right now, so we're going to get him right back into the mix in mere moments here, Jonesy. And it's something that we both have adjusted to as well, you even more so than me. If we go back to, you know, the days of Mike Inglis, when you and Mike started the broadcast together on another station for a few years, and then working with Paul Romanuk for 1 year. But then right now, whether it's working with me, working with Jack, working with Sherm, just kind of adjusting. But I think one of the things, and I'm speaking perhaps a little bit selfishly here, but it's just the reality, one of the things that allows us to maybe have the synergy and the flow that we do on this show is because you and I have worked together in some way, shape, or form for over 20 years, whether it be on the broadcast for 16, 17 years, or prior to that, pre- and post-game shows and hoop shows and whatnot. We kind of, like an old married couple, we can pick up on each other's tendencies and strengths and weaknesses, and we can sometimes finish each other's sentences.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's what, It's what makes for a good broadcast, and you know why you can, as Leo said, it's all about having fun. Like we're not curing cancer here. We're not coming up with a world solution for COVID-19. We're broadcasting basketball. We're having fun, and it should be fun, but yet at the same time, it should be entertaining and educational. So there's a fine line that we all walk.
Leo Ruttens joins us again. Leo, we just had to get a clearer line there for you. Leo, when you look at to kind of play off what Jonesy was just talking about, trying to find the fun in it, how fun do you think it is right now for the Raptors, considering the 2-8 start? They've recovered. They've gotten themselves back on track. Yeah, there have been a couple of hiccups this week, and they obviously want to get back on the winning track tonight and get at least back to that 500 mark. But what do you think the vibe around the team, around the locker room is now, Leo, compared to if we go back 6-8 weeks ago?
Oh, it's day and night. I mean, you're talking about, again, remember, this is a championship core, right? Losing is not part of the equation. And even for some of these guys, they weren't even close to being themselves. So you have this struggle as a team where, you know, you just don't accept losing. This is not what we do. And then you have individual players that are going, where's my game? Like this isn't me. I'm trying to do, like, I don't even recognize myself when I'm playing right now. And when you're going through all that at the same time, if anybody's played sports, you know that's just a twilight zone right there. And you're trying to, every day you come to your job and you're trying to figure out, okay, you know, what do I do? You know, how do I get out of this? And it becomes heavy, just like anybody else in any line of work. I think people forget that you're playing ball. It's all fun and games, but yeah, it is fun and games until it all goes south. And just like people in their regular line of work, I mean, when things go bad and things go bad for you personally and everything, it's heavy and you got to find a way out. So right now I think the Raptors are just having fun. And even when they lose, right, even the games that we've seen that they've lost, you still feel like you're watching the Raptors, right? There's always some kind of chance they may come back and win this game. There's always, you know, there's always certain characteristics of the way they're playing that's what we've grown accustomed to seeing. And I think that gives them comfort too, that, yeah, okay, we didn't play well enough to win. We made some mistakes, but we know what we can do. We know we can play better. We're good. And I made the point the last broadcast that there was a timeout late in the game, and you could see Freddie was like, you know, fist bumping and talking to guys. And even though they were going to lose the game, or it appeared to they were going to lose the game, there was no discouragement. There was nothing down. There was nothing. It was all positive. And I think that's where they're at right now. I think they really believe in themselves, and I still think it can get a lot better.
Our man Johnny Russin sending out some notes and some graphics and stuff. Pascal Siakam, his ability to bounce back, and you talk about it, you know, sometimes it's difficult. And when you're at the top of the scouting report, people zero in on you. And he had a tough night against Miami. And, you know, with guys, they played the zone, and he's looking at Adebayo and elite defenders like Iguodala and people like that. But his ability to bounce back, I mean, what are you expecting from him tonight? Because normally – He's good after a bad one.
Well, I just expect him to be himself. I'm not going to say that it was Miami's defense, Jonesy. I'm going to say a lot of what happened to Pascal the other night were self-inflicted wounds. I think that he's got to take a game like that and just say, okay, what can I do better? What can I change? I don't think there's a lot of guys that can, if he does everything he's capable of doing, runs the floor as hard as he can, crash the glass, put the ball on the floor, left, right, finishes. If he plays the game the way he's capable of playing, taking a mid-range, stepping out, knocking down the three, there's not a lot of guys that can contain him, and certainly not all game long. And it's about figuring it out, right? And, it looked to me that he mentally checked out because he just wasn't having his game. And the other part of that is fatigue. And the last thing you can do is say, okay, I'm exhausted, but mentally check out of a game because of that. or allow yourself to play bad because you're exhausted. Hey, you might miss some shots. Some of your shots might fall short. You might front rim them. But it doesn't mean you take bad shots. It doesn't mean you just throw the ball away. It doesn't mean you do that. Great players. You think Jordan wasn't tired when he played a game? Think about this. LeBron's, 18 years in the league. How many guys around him have missed games? You think LeBron isn't tired? You think LeBron doesn't have a sore ankle? You don't think he doesn't want to take a night off, but he comes to play? And that's not physical anymore. Yeah, he takes care of his body. He's in great shape, but that's mental. And I think to be a great player, that's the next step for Pascal and other guys, is to mentally say, I'm going to play through this. It may not be the greatest game in the world, but I can surely give a lot more than I'm giving. And I got to figure out how to do that. So I fully expect him to come back and have a good game. And then at the same time, I fully expect him to figure out how to have good games when he doesn't have that same energy and he is tired. And maybe not feeling the same way. He's got to figure that out. That's part of being a great player.
Speaking with Raptors television analyst, former NBA, Leo Routens. Leo, just veering away from the Raptors for a second, just everything you were talking about there about fatigue and injury and wear and tear on the body and everything, that kind of brings us back to where Jonesy and I were chatting 10, 15 minutes ago about the second half of the season with the schedule being released. It is going to be worth noting and monitoring how the players handle the second half of the year and the postseason. This season, Leo, we were discussing, second half of the year, a lot of teams have like 35 games in 65 days. Some have 40 games in 65, 67 days. There are stretches of 7 games in 10 nights. The season's not ending to the middle of May, and then, of course, the postseason will have the teams in the final playing right up until the middle of July. And I don't know if the NBA still will stay on track of saying, we plan to be back in training camp next October with the season starting by mid-October, late October. That's going to be a real quick turnaround and a whole lot of basketball going back to last summer's bubble, a 72-game season, which ends later, and then trying to get 2021, 2022 back on track for a regular start time. It's going to be pretty interesting to see how players' bodies are impacted by all this, not just this year, but next year and beyond.
Well, I'm going to use that same word again, Eric, heavy, right? It's going to be very heavy. And it's not just the physical toll. I mean, these guys are great athletes. And, you're playing, okay, you're going to play every other night. You're going to play 7 and 10, whatever. Not every guy is going to play 40 minutes. Some guy's going to play 10 minutes. Some guy's going to play 20 minutes. You got more trainers, better doctors, better physical care than they've ever had in the history of the game. So, but I think the issue is going to be, where's your outlet? Where are you getting away from this a little bit? Clearing your head, having a little fun, enjoying a dinner, night out with friends, just letting loose a little bit. Where are you doing that? You can't, right? And I think that's, you got to remember, athletes are generally nocturnal animals, right? You've got a lot of late nights and you socialize late after games and you travel to different cities and you kind of have that outlet. And then when you're really, really tired and you go, man, I don't know how I'm going to do this today. You walk into an arena with 20,000 people that are going crazy. You find the adrenaline kicks and you find a way. I mean, athletes have had some of the greatest games when they've been injured or, couldn't feel their legs because of that adrenaline. So that's the tough part for me. I think that, how do you summon up that energy? How do you get that? Where do you get the outlet? Where do you get that? Where do you clear your head to go out and just compete and play at the highest level? The games are the games, and this is what these guys do. But I think everything around the games right now is heavy, and that's going to be where individual players have to figure a way out of that to give themselves the best chance to succeed.
Leo, has it changed? And listening to all of what you said, has it, or is it going to change the modern day player if we continue? I mean, things have evolved. They've morphed. They still have the travel and all of that. But as you said, some of the stuff that you normally do, like the going out to dinner and like all of the things kind of around the game, as you said, on the outside are different. are we going to see that change impacting the younger players of this generation and the next generation? Or do you think it'll kind of go back to the way it was once guys become experienced and kind of figure things out? Because in the end, it is about, as you said, being prepared and looking after yourself.
But Jonesy, I think it's affecting everybody, right? I don't think it's just affecting the players. I think it affects the coaches, all the training and medical staff and the people around the team. They're the same way, right? I mean, they're on these trips and they're sitting in their hotel room looking at the TV. That's it. They're on lockdown just like everybody else. And nobody can tell me it's not impacting this game, because look at the scores. Look at the standings. Look at there's teams that home court doesn't mean squat right now. No. You go around the league. I mean, look at what one game separates about eight teams in Eastern Conference. I mean, come on. It's there's nothing normal about what's happening right now. And I think it impacts the older players that have been accustomed to a certain way of life. It's impacting younger guys going, hey, wait a minute, this isn't what I thought the NBA was going to be like. And that's why I said everybody's got to figure this out now, because the reality is, I don't think it's going to be normal to start next season, right? I think we're going to be into 2022, well into it, before we start thinking what is going to be normal, whatever that may be. So, this is, like I said, it's a crazy time, and it's a crazy time for everybody, whether you're an athlete or not, whatever you're doing. So it's just making adjustments, making the best of it, and figuring out what you can do to make it all click and work best for you.
Speaking with Raptors television analyst Leo Routens. Leo, one more from me at least, just kind of bringing it back to the Toronto Raptors, addressing perhaps, I don't know if it's fair to call it the elephant in the room, but it's certainly a story, whether it's fact, fiction, rumor, or otherwise, that just won't seem to go away. Leo, what's your take? What's your opinion on what becomes of maybe not just Kyle Lowry, but the Raptors as a whole, with roughly a month until the trade deadline, as they try to figure out buyer, seller, stand pat, figure out how they navigate through this second half of the season?
Well, Eric, I tweeted this yesterday. I'm not going to disrespect Kyle and everything he's done with the Toronto Raptors by talking about a rumor. Mm-hmm. First of all, when you hear these rumors come up, who said it? Tell me who said it. Show me that this is the exact team and they said this. This is what Kyle said. This is what Masai or Bobby Webster said. Tell me, show me. And so, if you know me, I don't talk about, like, I haven't talked about Drummond rumors. I haven't talked about any of the guys that are thrown about there. Because the reality is this: none of us know. None of us have any clue. Because if you know the Raptors, they're not talking. They never tell you anything as far as what they're going to do and what they're thinking. So I'm going to say the same thing I say all the time. Masai and Bobby Webster do their due diligence every single day. They're making phone calls. They're talking to teams. And when you're not winning, right, if you're not first place in the league, you're always looking a way to make your team better. And I don't think anybody becomes untouchable unless you're slated to win a championship and everything's looking good. Even when you had a chance, the Raptors still, with Kawhi Leonard, and they were in first place in Eastern Conference or in the top three at the time, made a move for Marc Gasol. So, I think that they're always going to be in that situation, and I don't think anybody is untouchable. But other than that, I don't think it's fair to jump in on rumors. I don't think the rumors matter, because the reality is we live in 24-hour sports talk. And everybody wants to have a scoop, and everybody wants to get something going, and nobody attributes the rumor to anything other than, hey, I heard this, and all of a sudden everybody runs with it. So I don't like to take part in that. When I know, I know, and then I'll tell you what I think.
Leo, appreciate the time and the insight as always. I'm sure we'll be seeing you. Well, I know I'll be seeing you over the course of the weekend. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll be talking again real soon.
All right, fellas. Always a pleasure. Talk later.
All right, Leo.
There is Leo Routens, Raptors television analyst, former NBA. We'll actually keep our conversation on the hard court with basketball, but we'll discuss the CEBL and, well, the announcement that came out in the last 24 hours that they will have a season yet again on Canadian soil, much like they did last summer when they had their bubble down in the Niagara region. We will chat about that and much more when we continue on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. I'm enjoying the music for a second, although at first I was waiting for, you know, Snoop Dogg, la-di-da-di-da to kick in a little bit here, Jonesy, and then it's the original. I know it's the original cut. I know that, Derek. He's in my ear saying it's the original. I know it's the original because I can tell it doesn't have the same bass, the same kick to it, but I'm still digging it either way. Anyways, enough of my musical interests. I get sidetracked a little bit time with the little bit of times there with the great tunes that Derek's spinning when we come back from break. Thanks to Leo Ruttens for joining us to start the show. Raptors in action tonight against the Houston Rockets. Oh, yeah, by the way, we didn't even mention it in our conversation with Leo. They've lost 9 straight games. And you know you don't want to be that team because you know at some point, Jonesy, that streak is coming to an end. And if you're a Raptor fan, you obviously hope that it's not tonight. We'll have the action for you, so it's a double dip of Smith and Jones today. We'll be back tonight with the tip-off at 7:30. But we continue on for the next 30 minutes here and bring you into the conversation right now the commissioner and CEO of the CEBL, Mike Morielli. Mike, thanks for the time today.
Oh, my pleasure, guys.
Hey, Mike, you guys announced the league yesterday, announcing the schedule for the season, and it's going to take place yet again on Canadian soil and not in a bubble. A 14-game season this year as opposed to the regular 20-game season that we've become accustomed to with the CEBL. Maybe let's start there. Why did you feel it was best to push the season back a month? Why is 14 better than 20? And just all of the logistics that go into getting this thing off the ground.
Well, I think that's it, right? It's the logistics that go into it, the decision-making, the environment we live in, the unknown. We wanted to take the best and safest approach and buy ourselves enough time, but still return in a profound way, but more importantly, return to our home market. So it's not that the bubble wasn't great. It was fantastic for us, but it doesn't accommodate or do everything we want it to do in terms of, you know, how important our communities are. And even if there are no fans in the stands, just that sense that in our markets that there's games going on and there's some sense of return to normalcy is really important to kind of motivate the areas and communities that we work in.
Mike, talk to me about, there must have been so much to slosh your way through logistically. It's not like you've got a league where, we can get on a bus or jump in our cars and go from one spot to the next. I mean, with teams in Saskatchewan and a team in Edmonton and out in BC, how do you work through some of the logistics of that to make sure, you know, you're maintaining the integrity of all the safety protocols around it, not endangering the athletes or other people, and yet playing your games?
Well, it's in constant communication with public health in the four provinces we play in. And those will evolve over time. So creating protocols, examining protocols, adapting to what's happening in current environments, and learning from some of the groups that have come before us. You know, thankfully, we were the first to return last year as a pro league in Canada. So we kind of paved the way and had some great key learnings. This year, we're returning in a more profound way back to our markets. And we'll learn from what the NHL has been able to do with their North Division and returning here. And we'll use that to our advantage. And again, you know, we are going to be dictated by public health in all of our markets, but we have to make a commitment to return. And I think, you know, in my position as a leader, I have to, you know, let my staff know that this is the game plan and we're going to work every day tirelessly until we achieve that. And we know some things are out of our hands, but we have a clear and defined goal. And that goal may not include fans, but for our players and for our staff and for our communities and our teams, we have to have that commitment to play. That's really important to us, regardless of whether we can sell tickets or not. And we'll adapt and we'll move. And we're still in our growth phase of what we're doing. And we're going to invest into this league and we're going to reap the benefits as we continue to grow.
Speaking with Mike Morielli, the president and CEO of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Mike, 7 games at home, 7 games on the road. And please correct me if I'm wrong on this, because I very well may be. I'm assuming that in the CEBL, the teams are not traveling on private charters and whatnot. Can you give me a sense of what travel will look like? And for that matter, even what a game day will look like? Because it's one thing to be in a bubble down in the Niagara region in the summertime, which was unbelievably successful, the way that you guys pulled that off, even in the early stages of the pandemic. And kudos to you and to the league and everybody involved for that. But now to be flying across the country and going in and out of arenas, in and out of cities, in and out of hotels and buildings and whatnot, can you give me a sense of, even though we're 4 months away from this, what a game day may look like for the players in terms of protocols and testing, what travel may look like, what the lifestyle is going to be for those couple of months of the season?
Yeah, it's a great question because it will and has evolved on a daily basis. We've created protocols, again, that are adaptable, but are at different levels because you're looking at, you know, areas where we have to travel across the country. We would classify those higher risk, you know, they're kind of a red zone level. And then our yellow zone or when we're taking the coach bus and our green zone is maybe just travel to and from the arena in your own vehicle. And then there's parameters around how that works and then how testing works prior to game day, in and around practices, how we get players into the country. You know, with certain tools that are available to pro sports league that meet certain criteria. So, and then we structured our schedule in a way that we're going to limit the amount of trips back and forth and concentrate on more kind of Western team road trips that come here through Ontario and Ontario-based teams that go through the West and do a road trip that way to minimize the exposure, the amount of time spent in situations that would be considered, elevated in terms of risk. So, I know we've done based on the protocols with our bubble and the protocols related to testing and sanitation and everything, mask wearing, et cetera, those now have to be expanded upon in a big way, to your point, because now you're entering into other instances in local markets where you have to protect yourself. So, those are still being developed as we go, but those are the type of ways we're looking at all of our events and kind of grading them on different scales. And we got great people that are putting those together for us.
Mike, let's talk games, man. We're sports guys, man. I miss being in a gym and hearing the squeak and the a little bit of trash talk. And that's the one thing about basketball. The trash talk is kind of open. In football, you had to like do it through the face mask or slide it through a helmet. Talk to me about some of your athletes. I'm watching some of these young guys and man, people coming into the league. I mean, a guy like Diamond Stone, who's a former first round NBA pick, Ottawa hires, they got a couple of young guys in Ottawa up in management with Andy Routens and Javon Shepherd and Patrick Ewing Jr. is brought in as a coach. Just everywhere throughout the league, there's great stuff going on. I mean, I look at Hamilton second 2 years in a row. Like, are they going to break through? What are you most looking forward to as the league continues to establish a footprint and build its build its following and its momentum in Canada?
Well, I think we're seeing it play out. I think we're starting to see where we started to where we're growing to and the pieces of the puzzle that we've added along the way, the Javon Shepherds, the Andy Routens, the Jermaine Andersons, and the list goes on. I don't want to leave people out, but, those guys that have played on the national team that know what it's like to go through the system at a collegiate level, at an international level playing, that have the experiences, that really understand the value of what the CBL opportunity provides to our Canadian players. The best thing that we have going for us and kind of our secret sauce, so to speak, is when we play. Because when we play in that spring and summertime provides access to the best Canadians that we have outside the NBA. And if you look what's going on in the European game and kind of scheduling and some of the pushbacks or reduced seasons, and you look at what's going on in the G League with the bubble, there's going to be an incredible demand for players to try to return to a court sooner than later, try to make up a few bucks along the way and get back to playing more basketball. So we are positioned incredibly perfect for not only pros, but also for the NCAA and U Sports players that are trying to start their next pro career. And we land in that perfect spot right out of college or university where you're learning the FIBA game in real time on national television, on international television, playing against high level talent. And you're now setting the table for, your next opportunity. And, you know, we really appreciate our position, not only from a development on a pro level, but the way that we can attract young people to see and look and feel like there is a realistic opportunity for me to remain in this country, develop in this country, and play professionally and make a name for myself.
Speaking with Mike Morielli, the president, or commissioner, I should say, and CEO of the CEBL. Mike, this may be difficult for you to answer, and this is not meant to knock any other leagues, present or past. But in a very short period of time, the CEBL has had some pretty strong success, some pretty big success, seems to be garnering more and more attention and clout and cachet. I mean, Jonesy, I think back to the conversation we had just a few weeks ago with Patrick Ewing Jr., hired as Ottawa's assistant coach, one of their assistants, and all the glowing things he had to say about the CEBL and its place in the global landscape. You know, when we think about basketball and the competition level and options for players and whatnot, what has made this league so successful compared to other leagues, as I say, past or present, that just have not been able to kind of plant their roots or dig in and achieve what you guys have in Canada specifically with the game of basketball?
Yeah, well, we learned a heck of a lot in our preparation for the league about why teams or leagues had not fared well or failed miserably in some cases. And we wanted to change that. We started with the governance, and the way we're owned and operated being a single entity means that we can establish in a pretty profound way, which we did, a league almost overnight. And, you know, there still are limitations because we own and kind of operate everything from an office down in St. Catharines. We have our local people on the ground and our presidents in all our markets. We do incredible work with incredible staff. But there are no local owners in those markets. So, you know, we still are building towards the next phase of where we're going in the evolution and adding new partners and growing the game holistically from all levels and really reinvesting into Canadian basketball. But we found the places where, you know, we can have profound impact. The timing of the season was important. Being pro-Canadian and predominantly Canadian was incredibly important. And being able to impress upon players and coaches and not even beyond that with fans yet, but just showing them that we're legit, we're for real, we're here to stay, we have a clear and defined pathway and goal, and that goal is to raise, you know, the boats across the entire country and really contribute to Canada basketball as a national federation, and contribute to communities we play in, and share the excitement, exuberance, and followership of or viewership and everything that came with the rise of the Toronto Raptors and what they've done over the last 25 or 26 years and really nationalize it in a big way. It's for all the attributes that basketball brings and the fact that it's culturally significant to a vast number of people in this country, there just hasn't been a place for it. And we're here to celebrate it. And there's a whole slew of other reasons why that it probably won't fit into this time period. But we just have a real good look at what's important. It's not driven entirely by the bottom line. It's driven by what's important to the community and what they want to see and what's important to our players, who are our biggest assets.
Mike, we appreciate the time on the show today. Thanks for joining us, and we're definitely, both of us, I can speak on Jonesy's behalf, I know, looking forward to the tip-off on June 5th. All the best, Mike.
Thanks, guys. You're
thanks, Mike.
Great supporters. We'll talk to you soon.
There
Take
is
care.
Mike Morielli, the commissioner and CEO of the Canadian Elite Basketball League. Again, season tipping off on June 5th, a 14-game schedule, and the teams will be playing 7 at home, 7 on the road, Edmonton, Hamilton, Ottawa, Saskatchewan, Guelph, Niagara. I think I mentioned all the teams in there. Fraser Valley, I think, is the one that I missed as well. So certainly looking forward to it. And fingers crossed, Jonesy, that, you know, not only that the league can do this successfully and go off without a hitch, but given the fact that it's on Canadian soil, and other than hockey, we haven't seen anybody else do that yet, I wonder if we might have a chance to have fans in attendance at some point. I'm sure a lot of that will be dictated upon, you know, the virus and vaccines and whatnot. But might we actually be able to watch basketball live and in person? We shall see.
Well, and Eric, as Mike said, it's it's terrific because it's not governed by the bottom line. I really think that with basketball's growth and popularity in the last 25 years, and then now going forward as basketball has a real spot worldwide, in the global niche of the game, that it's going to keep growing in Canada. And this league, if they do it right, they do it slowly, they do it properly. And Mike says they've learned from others. I mean, I think you could see like a 10-15 team league. I mean, there's no team in Manitoba right now. I think there's talk about a team coming to Montreal or possibly being in Montreal. And then you have your Atlantic provinces where people are just basketball mad. I can't believe there isn't already a team in Halifax or somewhere in Nova Scotia. So I see this gathering great momentum and being a really viable Canadian domestic league and it being talked about in the future, the same way we talk about leagues in Italy and Greece and Germany and Argentina and all these places around the world.
You know what I'm starting to think, Jonesy? If you go back, roughly, 10 years ago, maybe a little bit longer, if you recall, you, me, and our man Jacko, back when we were able to work with him on the station, we pooled our money together, and I think we said we'd each commit like 25 grand or something. We didn't have any idea how we'd come up with that money, because, I mean, I'd be lucky to come up with $25 right now. But we said we'd each come up with like 25 grand, and we would pool together to have $75,000 somehow, some way. We just needed somebody else to come up with the remaining $500 million, and it's now probably closer to $1 billion. As we attempted to bring the NBA back to Vancouver, we were going to try to get an expansion franchise or relocate an existing franchise and be the three-headed monster of the new ownership group. We just needed a major investor to come in and provide about 99.9% of the cash. Maybe we need to get involved in the CEBL, Jonesy. Smith and
there
Jones, ownership in like a Montreal team, a Halifax team, something like that. Jonesy, my juices are starting to flow a little bit here.
Why not just like squeeze another one in and make a rivalry? Like get a Burlington team, and then you've got that Hamilton Burlington, like that Argo Ticat, that Hab Leafs, that you got that backyard rivalry, and then you don't have to leave your house.
Now you really got my wheels spinning a little bit here, Jonesy. And I will say, I'm going to save it. I'll save it till we come back after the break, because I know we're way late on the break, and I know we have to wrap up the show, but I have a thought on another team that could or should be in this area. I'll tell you about it on Smith & Jones next on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones, thanks to Leo Routens for joining us today, Raptors television analyst, and of course Mike Morielli as well, CEBL commissioner and CEO. Jonesy, the league, the team I was talking about, that does need ownership and does need to be in this market, the WNBA. It's been something that's been rumbled around for a long time. It sounded like it was maybe not close, but it was certainly a more serious conversation, I believe, when Richard Petty was running things, and it seems like it's kind of petered out the last few years. But that, to me, is a league that would be highly, highly successful if there was a franchise in Toronto for the WNBA.
No question. No question. Again, it speaks to the growth of basketball. With Canada Basketball, the announcement of the partnership with Sportsnet, it's not just a men's tournament that's going to happen. There's a women's tournament happening, too. And just look at the success of the Canadian tournament, which has been arguably better than the men consistently over the last few years.
Well, I think Derek's trying to tell us something. We're a little bit late, and he wants to get to the commercial break.
All right, Derek.
So we're gonna wrap things up here. Writer's Block is coming up next. We're back again later on tonight with the Raptors and Rockets at 7:30, the tip-off. So a double dip of Smith & Jones. But also make sure you tune in later this afternoon after Writer's Block for the final edition of Tim and Sid as well. All right, we're stepping aside. Thanks for tuning in, Smith & Jones. We're back Monday on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.